Hello, a very good Saturday morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio. I'm Greg Hughes. Coming up on the programme, Brendan Devaney joins us to discuss Donegal's games against Dublin tomorrow. Sharon Corr, formerly of The Corrs, famous of course, talks about her new album, The Same Sun. With water charges on the way, whether we like it or not, Duncan Stewart joins us on the phone to give us some water and energy saving tips. You can get your questions in now if you like. And we discuss the Ice Bucket Challenge and how the impact has been so positive for the charity it raises money for. And author Martin Dillon joins us on the programme to discuss his new book. Your calls, comments, requests, welcome to 07491 25000. Marion waiting to take your calls, or you can text the show 086 77 00 555. Good morning again. First in studio is Michael Tunney, who's CEO of the Donegal Enterprise Board. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Thank you very much for coming in. Are you well?
I am very well, thank you.
Good stuff. Yeah. We'll see what's making the news in the papers today. But before we do, tell us a bit about the Donegal Enterprise Board.
Well, I suppose the most significant thing in the last number of months, Greg, is we've been restructured in Donegal, as part of Donegal County Council now. So we're now rebranded as the Local Enterprise Office, carrying out the same role and functions, but much closer in our working relationships on a day-to-day basis with Donegal County Council, in particular, I suppose, in the community, culture and enterprise section in the council. We no longer are a separate legal entity, so the board and company structure is gone. So there is pluses and minuses, but so far it's going well. I mean, it's been a very busy summer. Nationally, there's been a couple of initiatives being brought in with a fairly tight deadline, such as there was a scheme launched by Pat Rabbit, actually launched in Donegal, out in Aranmore, an online voucher scheme to assist companies trade online. So we've had applications in on that, consider them, and just in the process now of issuing letters of offer to almost 30 businesses. Various.
So do you feel the role of the Enterprise Board or the Local Enterprise Office, it's called now, has been watered down or has it been improved? Or is it? Do we not know yet? Is it?
We
still
don't know.
A
I would hope it has been improved. I mean, I think that was the objective by both our minister and the minister for the environment at the time, that by integrating the local the enterprise board as it was within the local authority structure, that you would have better integration of the services. I mean, we had very good working relationships with Donegal County Council and the staff in Donegal County Council, but also other agencies like Enterprise Ireland, Uthras and the Gaeltacht, the organisations like Garrick Energy of Technology. So we would hope to continue that. I think Donegal, we were probably stronger than a lot of other counties. So time will tell, I suppose, really, as to whether we can maintain the focus on the small business community and add to that. And you know, some of the things we're trying to do is add to that. One of the things we've just started, for example, is we have a strategy for food in the county called the Donegal Food Coast, and we've been delivering that for the last maybe 3 years. Now we've started a process to draft a strategic action plan for creative industries or creative entrepreneurship in the county. A lot of focus on that in Europe as well as nationally. So we felt, well, rather than just maybe plug in and be opportunistic and be about future funding, try and decide what do we want to do in the county and who are those type of entrepreneurs in the county, or how can we get more of them, how can we help them along. So that's a process which I think is kind of exciting, because it's kind of an unsure area, and depending on how broad the definition that you have of creative entrepreneurship, you either have a few or a lot. So, you know, hopefully by Christmas we'll have that, and again trying to tie that in with work that Donegal County Council have done in the past and related to the creative industry sector.
How easy is it for people to access your services or indeed funding? Because, you know, one of the biggest criticisms of some organisations in the past is that, you know, you can have this mandate, you can have this mantra and this plan of action, but when it comes to try and get cash out of it, or to get an idea off the ground, or to get the support that you actually need to make your idea a business, well, that's when the hoops that you have to jump through become small and many in number.
It depends what side of the fence you're on, really, when it comes to is it difficult, is it not difficult. The criteria in relation to accessing grant aid is quite restricted. So it's only available to certain types of businesses in certain sectors. So it's primarily manufacturing, unique services, both of them with a potential to export. So the vast majority of businesses that we would have in this county and in this country are not eligible for direct grant assistance from the likes of the local enterprise offices, leader when it's in funds, Enterprise Ireland, Udras na Gaeltachta, and definitely IDA because that's inward investment. But there are other sources of funding. And we would find a lot of the people that come to us around starting a business or growing their business, it ends up actually to get more benefit out of the non-direct financial assistance than the finance. Mm. Now, I think there is an argument still that we haven't got fully functioning banks yet who aren't definitely lending to the micro enterprises.
Well, that's
smaller
it. If you've
businesses.
Got a small business,
yeah.
You know, you will get money now, obviously, if you can prove that you can pay it back. But I mean, you know, you do need banks and lending institutions to also take a gamble themselves, to take a risk. I mean, that's what they're there for, you would hope, to yeah. some extent, you know.
Yeah, well, they are. But obviously, they're businesses, so they're looking for returns. But I think it'll be a while before the banks get to that stage. It'll be another 18 months or so. But I mean, we have nationally an entity that was launched about 2 years ago called Microfinance Ireland that is operational. We have had an increase in the number of applicants coming for Microfinance Ireland funding through the Enterprise Board in Donegal, the local enterprise office. And actually only next week, Microfinance Ireland is launching a new scheme and basically working closely with the local enterprise offices so that if somebody applying for a loan to Microfinance Ireland comes through the local enterprise office and the local enterprise office does the due diligence and does the recommendation, they'll get it at 1% less than what the standard rate would be, which is 8.8, so it'll be down to 7.8. So that's an option. We historically would have had, and we still have, the County Enterprise Fund in Donegal, which was set up 25 years ago with money from IFI, still providing a range of small micro loan schemes. Mm. The other side of it is, though, we, you know, from the agency point of view, it's the ideas and the people with ideas coming through.
And then maybe the network thing that comes
and
from
the networking.
That as
and
well.
And one area we just mentioned that, Greg, is that I mentioned before we come on air, there's a national competition was launched by the Taoiseach back maybe in May, I think it might have been, Ireland's Best Young Entrepreneur. So this will be a county final, regional finals and national finals. And we ourselves in Donegal and Wicklow were the two counties that got out of the blocks earlier in the summer. So we actually have our final next Wednesday, so we have 15 young entrepreneurs between the ages of 16 and 35, I think it is, presenting their business. They've gone through a boot camp. They went through a very intensive 2.5 weeks. They were in our offices from 8 in the morning, and on one occasion they were there till 3:30 in the morning, working on their propositions and fine-tuning it along with the guys who are delivering it. So we'll be announcing on Wednesday evening the three category winners: the best new idea, the best existing business, and the best startup, and an overall winner.
And I would see quite a few of them that are talking about that on Twitter, some of our youngest and brightest minds. And they seem very up for it, very excited and very interested in it. And you know, that's where we have to be, isn't it? I mean, if we do have a fantastic creative mind, we don't want to export them. We do want to recognise what they can achieve, you know, foster to help them achieve what they can achieve. And also, you know, if someone's successful in this county, then the county benefits as a whole. So
absolutely, but it's so difficult, and it's very difficult because, you know, we would have said, nationally, some of us saying, look, you know, there's not a demand because we're already in that space. But when you create something and you brand it at a particular target group, whether it's young people and you define them 18 to 30 or 18 to 35 or 18 to 25, or you say female entrepreneurs between this and this, or the, you know, the graying population, 55 pluses, you get people in that to come forward who wouldn't normally come forward.
Yeah.
And it's always an interesting kind of a thing that once you make it very targeted, you do get a different response. So I must admit, we've been very, very pleased with the level of commitment, but also the response. I mean, we had a significant number, and we had a short list. So we initially gave 19 the chance. I think 16 have stuck the distance. So it's very positive, and hopefully they're, you know, we will see some of them develop their businesses, some of those with the ideas take them forward,
and hopefully go on to win the whole thing outright.
Well, it'll be very nice, very nice, you know. Yeah.
Right. Well, cracking on. What's jumped out from the papers?
Well, I suppose the one thing that, again, just in the context of where we operate and the local enterprise office, this whole issue of the upcoming budget. You know, it's been in the papers yesterday, it's in the front of the papers today again. That tied in with the whole issue of, I suppose, an extra tax take there from, I think, by revenue. But I think the whole issue around the budget, whether it will be small cuts on tax or universal social charge, I think personally, you know, and when you talk to businesses, there's a slight increase in the confidence, and people are beginning to spend a little bit of money, and businesses are beginning to, you know, but I think until there is more money in your pocket, well, I think generally the people won't spend. So I'd be thinking, you know, and I was reading something just yesterday, and I, you know, do you just have minor tax, or do you, but I think essentially government will have to do something to put money back into people's pockets. You know, yes, you can look at the, you know, you can target the I suppose, the more disadvantaged by increasing the various social welfare payments. But at the same time, I think you won't get the confidence back in the economy.
Yeah, we're talking about the squeezed middle here. I think, you know, the working poor, as they're called, that, you know, they're putting in the hours, they're lucky enough to have a job and probably enjoy it. But at the end of the week, by the time they pay all the bills, by the time they buy the books for the children going back to school and get the school uniforms and the new bag and then pay their electricity and everything and what have you, they're probably either in a negative or have very little to spend. So they're not going into the shops or into the pubs or into the restaurants or into the wider business community. Yeah. But this government doesn't seem to buy into that, you know, that if you give people money and spend it, it magnifies and rotates through the economy, because it's been proven that they don't. I don't think that's an unfair criticism.
Yeah, I think, dare I say it, I mean, just from my knowledge of and bits of reading over the months, I mean, I think a lot of what the governments in Europe are driving, they're driving this whole thing of you know, fiscal control. So you control costs, reduce the cost of everything, reduce wages, reduce the spend, and hopefully it'll come all round. But I mean, right, but and that's very much driven, I think, by the German kind of psychology of how you do things, about you control.
Well, they've got the money, you see.
but again, if you go back, if you talk to, I mean,
and Germans don't buy houses either, as necessarily.
They don't, but also, I mean, if you talk to the German, we have been involved in a European program for the last couple of years, and there's the lead partner is Germans, and you talk to some of them, they're, you know, they know that, I mean, their salaries are going to be the same, you know, so 1%. So the only thing they look at is inflation. So if inflation goes up 0.5%, they worry about it, you know, where we don't worry about that. Mm. Because it's very controlled. Mm. And I think, you know, when you look at, again, I was reading yesterday, if you look at the old employment growth, if you look at in the UK, like their level of they've gone through the whole hassle of most other European countries have gone through, but their unemployment level is only something around 6%, less than significantly less than the European average, somewhere akin to the UK.
Northern Ireland can't be very far off statistic full employment, the way job creation is. Yeah. I mean, you know, like there is always a percentage of people that either can't work or perhaps will choose not to. I mean, Northern Ireland is not very far off that. And you know, they're attracting an awful lot of quality jobs that perhaps the Republic would have had first dibs at.
But then we get into the very sort of sensitive areas around, you know, salary and wage
and
levels.
And that's what I like. Come on, what are you saying?
Because I think the success in the UK in reading about it is that they have taken in, you know, initiatives in relation to the social welfare system. Mm. So they're encouraging people like to get off it and start working. And they've kept the wage levels low, so employers are taking people on.
Yeah.
So there's that. They're working at that end of it, you know, so making it attractive for employers to take people on, but not making it attractive or making it more attractive to go back to work.
Yeah.
So they're kind of driving it that way. And then you have, I suppose, industry, people taking on, they're more expanding, business are expanding. And then the other interesting thing, which is in the papers again today, is this whole issue of, the, you know, Scotland, what's going to happen in Scotland. Mm. And there's been programs, and very interesting programs, a couple of nights there on BBC and that, and but I think in the papers, and, you know, what we seem to pick up on a lot of our national papers is, you know, everybody, you know, Scotland, if you read any paper now, it's going to say Scotland saying yes. I'm not too sure.
Well, why do you think that's going to go? It's unthinkable, is it, that Scotland would vote for independence?
I don't think it's unthinkable that Scottish people would want independence.
Mm.
Again, I go back to the pound in their pocket.
Mm.
I think a lot of the people will, in the end of the day, decide, well, is it worth the chance that actually we may be worse off?
Mm. And are you voting for the flag, or are you voting for the union, or are you as you say, are you voting because of the money in your pocket? Because, you see, from the couple of the debates that I endured, I didn't watch them, I endured them, because politicians shouting over each other does nothing for me at all, but the questions weren't answered, you know. There was lots of maybes, possiblys. And if I was undertaking a vote of such consequence, I would want definitive answers, you know.
But I think, see, a lot of it, when it, again, this comes down to the whole, you know, the science or non-science of the economists. Mm. You know, it's the what-ifs. They don't know. So if Scotland votes yes and if moves out, what happens? You know, I don't think there's any issue. They'll stick with the sterling.
Yeah. They can't stop using the pound.
You know, what the knock-on effect? I mean, Scotland has always had its own separate legal system. I remember that from my time doing planning law and all that when I was a planner. It always has that separate system. So it was part of, but had its own. So it's not that big a break, I think. Mm. But there'll be a whole lot of other consequences. But just how it will pan out. And it'll be a long-term thing, you know. Mm. But interesting, I think, from
But there could be, if say they do vote for independence, who's to say there could not be a unionist resistance and how that might develop itself? You know, I mean, there is obvious precedence to that, but that can't be ruled out. And I don't know how much that's been discussed about. But if people feel very passionately about a union or otherwise, well, then, you know, it can manifest itself into rather unpleasant circumstances.
Yeah, but the other side of it is if you're in a democracy and there's a democratic vote, and I'd say the significant majority or majority votes yes to leave the union, or, you know, then you're either a Democrat or not a Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, if we ever got to the stage that we had a democratic vote in Northern Ireland to be either in or outside of a republic and they voted yes, well, then you have, you know, those who are in politics can't argue with that.
That's the democratic will
of the people. So you're into that kind of space as well. So it's an uncertainty, I think, you know, from the point of view of our economy. That was one thing that caught me. Obviously, from the point of view, I think you're going to touch on with Brent Renan and the Venny, a lot of issues around sport this weekend, you know, between red cards rescinded, between going down to the game today down in Limerick. And I think the interesting thing is I see there's still tickets in the paper today still available, so we're saying they would have a full house, and obviously the American two American teams, Penn State, whatever else, have arrived. And
it's ironic in that Dublin, you know, after the Gareth, I know it's not the same as the Gareth Brooks situation, but you can't help but think that it's like this American football game tonight was scheduled 2 years ago, and then obviously, you know, the replay last weekend, and it had to move the game and the controversy surrounding that. But you're saying, the papers are saying that the Mayo Kerry game is not a sellout.
Yes, there's still tickets available, they're saying. So that, you know, and again, it's just that, and I think probably if I was out having a rerun this morning, I was thinking about it, probably somebody in the GAA said, well, look, if there is a replay, it's Kerry and Mayo. Kerry don't generally travel until the final, so we won't fill the house anyway. Like, so we're not, you know, we'll find somewhere else in between. And that on the sport, and that along with obviously this ridiculous money that United are playing for Angel Di Maria, and I see in the paper today there.
Well, Manchester United are in a bit of bother because if they, and I apologise in advance to Manchester United fans, are you one of those?
No, okay. I would have followed them on and off, but I wouldn't.
No, because they're so desperate at the moment that if they wish to sign a player, you can pretty much name your price.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, Di Maria is probably 15, 20 million overpriced there, but because United have to strengthen the squad, the economics, it's supply and demand, isn't it?
Supply and demand. I think you'll see one of the papers were comparing, I think the Burnley team actually cost less than Di Maria's price tag. You know, I mean, I guess it's silly in the context of sport.
I think it's even WK, or Wimbledon, whatever they're called now, WK Dons, who beat Man United 4-0 during the week. I think their whole squad's less than a million.
Which I think in a team sport, it comes down to the end of the day, the collective will or collective sort of ambition and commitment of that team, which brings us back to whether we will have that in Croke Park against Dublin. And, you know, I was reading one of the articles in the paper there this morning. I think it was a guy in the Irish Times sort of saying that hopefully Dublin won't succumb to the pressure of 2011 or the intimidation. Now, my recollection of that game was that Dublin actually won the game by taking Carol Lacey out of the game. It was never, ever been cited as a key incident, but that's when things changed for us. We hadn't somebody to drive forward on that particular day, but we wouldn't see.
Well, listen, if you get two pundits in the one room, you'll hear four opinions anyway.
Well, absolutely. So I'm not sure we could talk sport all day. And getting away with sport, obviously the big issue, I think, you know, for Europe and the world is the whole Russian thing, you know. And
it's hard to get your head around that, and we've discussed this before and it's been widely discussed. When you compare what happened in Syria and the reaction, the international reaction to that, and the Gaza situation, and then this Ukrainian situation and the annexing of Crimea and the reaction, the international community's reaction to that against Russia's 27,000 nuclear bombs, it's escalating. I mean, it's a concern and it's something that can't be ignored.
It's just funny how it has panned out. I mean, again, you've been reading it over the last months and that. I mean, it would appear that probably if Europe had gone softly, softly, gently, gently, in time it would have become probably, you know, part of, joined the EU and all the rest. But somebody in Europe got quite bullish. The Prime Minister in the UK got quite bullish. And then Russia decided, well, you know. And I think Putin is basically, he keeps flexing the muscle. I mean, a week ago we were talking about an unconditional and sort of indefinite ceasefire and a road path to peace and all the rest. And then midweek, if you believe the photographs that were published and all the rest of the troops coming, you know, an incursion and an invasion and all the rest. I think the Polish Prime Minister suggested, he was saying, like, if it looks like, sounds like, and kills like a war, then it is a war.
Yeah.
And obviously, given their history, they would be very aware of if there'd be the front line if anything happens. But I think it's, I suppose Europe, I think Europe has a bit like, if you go back to the 30s and what happened before, I mean, they're always very apprehensive about committing in case it precipitates something too early. But I to me, you know,
but I mean,
Putin will keep pushing.
Yeah, of course he will. And his popularity is huge. And, you know, people say, well, what's it got to do with us? Well, then you have sanctions coming back the other way now that's affecting some exports and what have you. It's just like, I do understand it, but it frustrates me that you can have, you know, almost 3,000 people, innocents, many of them killed in one area, and nothing happens.
Yes.
And then you have I know quite a lot of people have now, it's emerged, have died in that region, but that's not what is making the likes of America and the UK and other countries react. It's not that. It's monetary or...
Oh, absolutely, yes.
You know, that's what's mind-boggling in this day and age.
Well, I mean, in this day and age, I think we're probably more cynical than ever now in the context of what governments, what particularly large governments, about. It's always been about economy, and it's always been about money, and it's always about those who will lose. And probably, I suppose, to be fair to say, very cynically saying, it's large governments don't necessarily control their own future. It's the multinationals and the conglomerates that control it, and they're the people who actually control where gas flows, where oil flows, and all the rest. So those are the kind of things that are in there, and the backers behind certain governments.
Also, I mean, look at the amount of national debt and borrowing that America has. Who is pulling the financial strings of America?
Well, I wonder
someone
about
has the ability to bankrupt that country.
Who are these entities that control the debts of nearly all of the countries of the world?
Well, that's it.
And that's the controlling influence.
They probably are like this group of eight around a table that are literally, you know, determining things?
Yeah.
I'm sounding like a conspiracy theorist now.
I would be quite, at times, when you go into that space, you can get totally lost in conspiracies, you know, and you get very cynical about what happens. But I think there's always been, life has always been secondary in most wars.
Mm.
You know, if you go back to World War One, which they're commemorating, like, nothing to do with, you know, small nations or large nations or anything else. Like, I mean, they were basically large dynasties fighting over pieces of tracts of land in Europe at the time, you know, until we all got caught up on it at the particular time. So it's always been about assets and controlling and power and money and wealth.
But people
have always been collateral.
In reality, if America is on one side of the world, Russia's on the other, not literally, but metaphorically, and Russia has taken a bit of Ukraine. And I'm not. Don't get me wrong. I'm not in any way diminishing the impact on that and the terrible loss of life. But in reality, does that put America up or down? You know, why is it so interested in the affairs of the Ukrainians, and why is it so uninterested in the affairs of the people of Gaza? You know, it's a head scratcher. Well, it's not. I mean, it's easily explained, but, you know,
easily explained when generally, you know, well, you look at the other side, it's Gaza and Israel, and there's lots of vested interests, or, you know,
well, that's it, and it's back to the money, isn't it?
Back to the money and the backers and the controlling power.
Absolutely. And who is pulling America's strings? Because I don't think it's Barack Obama.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I think that no matter whether it's Barack Obama or, you know, one of the Bush or anybody, there's always somebody pulling the strings, or somebody have a controlling influence. And it's not only in America. I think it's throughout. I mean, you know, if you go back to the crisis that we ended up in here, it was, you know, it was banks.
Mm.
And banks are controlled again by large multinationals, conglomerates. And they were the ones who...
One has to stop somewhere.
They were the ones who called the shots. Yeah. You know, and we were in the front line, Ireland, at a particular time. I always felt we were marched into that bailout before anybody else. You know,
the guinea pigs. What else has caught your eye? The time always goes so quickly for this part.
The whole story of the couple in Dublin, again, it's hitting the papers, that you know, pensioners in Dublin who lost their home.
Yeah.
And again, I suppose it's that fallout from the crisis that we just talked about. Mm. It's still ongoing.
Put out in their pyjamas, they were.
Yeah. So you know, at that particular stage in their life, you know, and still on a housing list, and you know, and they're one off, I'm sure, many. And if you look, I mean, the housing list in Fingal and most of the councils in Dublin, you know, are just, they can't cope with the numbers. But I think when you read that, on one side, another story in the paper then about, you know, this Canadian company that's bought whatever it is, 1,200 whatever apartments now in Dublin, whatever it was, Nama. So the control, it's an opportunity for one, you know, leads to, you know, something that's has an action-reaction kind of, and a reaction of somebody buying and putting people out of a house as you have people at that age, pensioners, on whatever it was, €350 a week, unable to find somewhere to stay. You know, and then, you, of course, in the papers, no matter what paper you pick up, any other week, and again today's put in a couple of papers, number of issues around the HSE. You know, I think there was an issue.
Have you any faith in Varadkar getting it right? Because I'm not hearing the same criticism of him that Dr. James Riley received. I mean, it was lambasted, perhaps many would say rightly, others would say wrongly, for many, many months. He survived many scandals, if you think about it, between the jigs and the reels, and not all of them were related to his job directly. I like Varadkar. I think he did really well in his last portfolio, but he's got a big job. But he'll stand up for more funding, maybe, so that's what's needed.
Yeah, but I think if you talk... Well, as I view the health HSE, it's a black hole for funding. Now, you talk to people in other countries, and it seems to be a common thing that the health services in most countries seems to be a black hole. And you go back, from what I can pick up and talking to people, dare I say, to me, it's a huge monolith, this the HSE, that even at local level, it's hard to find somebody who actually is responsible and was it, I made that decision. I think that's, unfortunately, it's a bit like one of these organisations where...
But is that not a countrywide problem? We don't have accountability in this country. And never have.
Well, I think we have had it. I do think that over the years, particularly when the tiger was roaming, running around mad, everybody got their head stuck in the trough, excuse the expression, like, and that was the whole basis of it. Everybody, unions, employers, everybody got a piece of the action, a slice of the cake, whatever you want to call it. And as a result of that, it was a collective. Every decision had to be a collective decision, which meant that actually nobody said, people got unused to making decisions, probably particularly in the public sector. Actually making the call, well, no, we can't afford that, or here's two options, we either do this, or we do this, this, and this. And I think, to me, when you read about, say, an IT system down in the Cork Hospital, like in Lods now, not, you know, having to be sent off somewhere else because the IT system's out of date, you know, read somebody else, no beds for a teenager or whatever it was, you know. You say, well, there's something wrong. I mean, I know they're always one-off cases, but there's just so many of them. And you tie that into, like, the fiasco we had in the hospital here, you know. You'd say, well, somebody made decisions or didn't make the decisions there.
I mean, this week at Letterkenny General Hospital, there's been about four or five people on trolleys, you know, which is too much in trolleys and wards. And then on the exact same day that the IMO made a statement about the lack of consultants in hospitals, that figure increased to 28. And then the next day it was back down to four or five.
I'm not
suggesting anything other than a coincidence, you know, but it's a big coincidence.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just think the HSE.
What I'm saying is it possible? And I'm not suggesting it happened, but is it possible that it's, you know, the patients are in the middle? And I'm excluding frontline staff from this, by the way, because I know it almost sounds like a line that's just thrown out there time after time. But in reality, you know, everyone knows the hard work they do under a great deal of pressure, very little money. I'm talking more about the unions and also perhaps, you know, the HSE management themselves. Is there a possibility that maybe some of this is patients trapped in the middle of an issue between those two guys?
I would think, I would imagine whatever's going on, always the patient or the client always the one that gets caught in the middle. You know, and I mean, we all have experiences of various hospitals, but I mean, I've had good and bad, you know, going to casualty with various kind of injuries over the years. But at times you'd wonder why people have to wait so long. Particularly in the emergency unit, in this hospital here.
But it's down to staff. That's, I mean, the bottom line. There's a lack of staff. You're rubbing your chin there as if to suggest perhaps that.
Well, I sat one morning for 3 hours and there was only one person ahead of me. And then I went in, there was nobody in getting treated inside. And I couldn't figure out, there was, I think, seven people there in the staff inside. And I couldn't figure out why I was left waiting for nearly 3 hours. So, you know, and I was saying, well, you know, and I had a monitor so I could see who was out in the waiting room. And I'm thinking,
you're holding ticket number two.
I was scratching my head afterwards saying, why did that take so long?
We're out of time, Michael. Predictions on the Donegal game tomorrow. You mentioned the GAA, so you have a passing interest in it. I don't want to hear anything negative.
I would hope we would win by about 2 points. Okay. 1 point will do me.
1 point will do.
One point would do me.
A Michael Murphy point, injury time point will do fine. Perfect.
Yeah.
Michael Tunney, it's the CEO of the local enterprise office now.
Head of local enterprise.
Head of local enterprise. I'm going to have to update my records.
No problem, great.
But listen, it's been great to speak to you, get an insight into the work that that's doing. Best of luck to the entrepreneurs that are taking part in that initiative. And as I say, hopefully they'll kick on and win the national competition.
Hopefully we can kick on. And thank you very much,
Greg. It's been an absolute pleasure having you. And thank you very much, Michael. Okay, you're tuned to the Weekend Edition here on Highland Radio with Greg Hughes. Calls, comments, texts, more than welcome to 086-7700-555, or you can call us on 074-912-5000. It's Marion who's working on the programme today because Yvonne has abandoned me to an electric picnic. Okay, still to come, as I say, we are going to be discussing the Donegal game with Brendan Devaney. Have a brief chat with him. We're going to be talking to Sharon Corr of the Corrs, and also, there's so much more besides, so we're going to have to try and jam all that in. We're going to be talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge and what it's done for the Irish Motor Neurone Disease Association, but we do have to take a quick break. Okay, well, if you're a fan of Facebook, it's become Facebooket of late, and other social media not far behind it. Everyone seems to have got involved with the Ice Bucket Challenge. And it started with the ASL in America, and here it's called the Irish Motor Neurone Disease. And the communications executive with that organisation is Dervla Wynn. Good morning to you, Dervla.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks very much for giving us this opportunity to come on and talk about the challenge.
Yeah, and before we talk about the challenge, tell us a little bit about the motor neurone disease, because I've spoken to people who have had family affected by it, and it's devastating, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, I suppose to give it to you in a kind of a simple situation. First of all, like, we all got up this morning, got out of our beds, got dressed, we brushed our teeth, whatever, combed our hair. When somebody gets diagnosed with motor neuron disease, typical motor neuron disease, which would be ALS, because just to mention that motor neuron disease is actually an umbrella over various different types of the disease, but typical MND, which is quite progressive, somebody with motor neuron disease wouldn't be able to get up and do all those things that we do.
What we take for granted, effectively.
The everyday things that you and I take for granted, it stops. So they no longer can do that. So as a result of that, they need help. They need somebody to go in there, or they need somebody to start caring for them. And usually the carer becomes the spouse or a family member. So because they need such high level of support, it's important for organisations like the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association to be there and to provide these supports. So what we would do is we would have, first of all, two dedicated nurses who visit each of our clients throughout the country, and they do this on a daily basis. Mm. We also provide home help, which is a small grant which can help the primary carer as well as the person with motor neuron disease, insofar as that if the primary carer needs a break, that somebody can come in for a couple of hours during the day and relieve the person so that they can go off and do the shopping, have a cup of tea, whatever. So, you know, it's quite vital that we look after the carer as well as the person.
What difference? I mean, you couldn't have seen this coming down the tracks, this challenge that went so viral. You couldn't have seen it happening. The amount of money raised has been astronomical locally, hasn't it? And absolutely. I mean, I'm being parochial here for the moment, just in Ireland.
Pardon?
I'm being parochial a little bit, but I mean, in Ireland, it's been a huge success and loads of people have donated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people have been very, very generous. The association is absolutely overwhelmed and flabbergasted by the amount of people that have supported the organisation. Like, it's absolutely, we're all very, very, very warmed by it, to be honest with you, because it just goes to show that people are now understanding what motor neuron disease is and how important it is to provide these supports to people with the condition.
Okay, now, how do people get more information? Because we are getting some texts and calls coming in, of course, and we just do not have the time today to go through you know, to talk about the disease in great detail. Yeah. So is there a website? So how can people get more information?
Yeah, absolutely. If people want to get more information on our organisation, they can visit www.imnda.ie, or they can call us, or they can visit our Facebook page. Either it's Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association, or they can free phone us on our 1-800-403-403 number.
Fantastic. And have you done it?
I have, yes. We were all up in Trinity College yesterday with Professor Orla Hagman.
Only yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday. And we all did it. People from the research team in Trinity College also did it. And we had all the politicians doing it. We had a couple, Mary Hannafin was there.
I saw that, yeah.
There was lots of people.
And it was nice that it was tied actually in with the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association rather than perhaps spread out over the last while. And is there any comfort, do you think, that we're talking and laughing about something positive in association with, as I say, a disease that affects so many in a very bad way, but we're having the conversation? Do you understand what I'm saying there? It's so convoluted, but it has to come out eventually as a positive, doesn't it?
I suppose, well, you see, the thing is, like, the positive side of this is that we're raising money to provide support to people with motor neuron disease so that they can have a good quality of life once they get this condition. Mm. And that's paramount. I mean, people with motor neuron disease are at the heart of the association's focus. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, that is the positive thing, that they're going to get the support. And to be very honest with you, like, we haven't made a decision on how this money is going to be spent, because it's over 1.1 million that has been raised and it's still coming in. And we are going to be consulting with each and every person with motor neuron disease and asking them how they feel the money should be spent.
And isn't that good that that's where we're at, though? You know,
absolutely.
Rather than saying this is where we're at and this is the money we need, for once we're front loading the money a little bit thanks to people's generosity, and then you can have that conversation.
Yeah.
Dervla, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Brilliant. Thank you very
much
for giving us the opportunity.
It's a pleasure. Dervla Wynne there, who's a communications executive with the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association. Well, everyone's been at it, haven't they? Marion's been out in the streets, and Barry's been trolling the internet, and this is the background to the Ice Bucket Challenge for those who are not aware.
It's been dominating your social media stream for the past few weeks. The Ice Bucket Challenge has had everyone and their granny chucking buckets of ice water over themselves for charity. The initiative began earlier this month in the US to raise funds for Lou Gehrig's disease, the US term for motor neuron disease. Everyone from David Beckham.
Hi, I'm David Beckham, and I'm accepting Ryan's ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
To local stars such as Lisa McHugh.
Hi folks, I'm Lisa McHugh, and I'm accepting my Ice Bucket Challenge from Nathan Carter. Here goes.
While some of the county's politicians have also been getting involved.
I wish to acknowledge the nomination.
Thanks very much for the nomination, Chief of Pringle.
And the Donegal public have also been getting in on the act.
Yeah, I've done the Ice Bucket Challenge, I did it for charity. I just did it yesterday, my auntie nominated me, and then I nominated four of my friends. It's a really good cause, it's really raising awareness as well as money for the charity.
I think the Ice Bucket Challenge is a good idea for raising awareness for the ALS and all, but I think people's kind of lost track of the way it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be about donating and not constantly trying to outdo each other.
I haven't done the Ice Bucket Challenge yet, but if I get nominated, I might do it. But I'm a bit worried because I heard someone had a heart attack from it.
Myself, my husband and my daughter done the Ice Bucket Water Challenge. At the beginning now, I wasn't, you know, I really didn't want to do it because of the water, whatever. I would be kind of scared of water. But I did it anyway, and it was for a great cause, and we did it for cancer.
All seven in my family have done it, and I think it's a very worthwhile cause, so long as everybody is giving the money that they promise.
Although the Ice Bucket Challenge hasn't been fun and games for everyone who has taken part, Teresina Bell, a teacher from Drogheda, was caught on film running into a metal clothesline after taking part in the challenge.
I really don't like doing this. Oh, God.
That unfortunate incident resulted in Miss Bell being left with two huge golf ball lumps in her head, as well as a busted lip, a bruised tooth, and a neck whiplash. But overall, the Ice Bucket Challenge has been a huge success, with donations to the Irish Motor Neuron Disease hitting over 1 million euro, while other charities have also benefited.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Still to come in the next hour, Brendan Devaney will be joining us to discuss Donegal's games tomorrow in Croke Park. Sharon Corr of the Corrs, formerly of the Corrs and obviously a TV personality now, she's on to discuss her new album, The Same Sun. We'll also hear a track from that. Duncan Stewart, of course, well-renowned gentleman. Well, water charges are on the way, whether we like it or not. It looks like we're going to have to pay them. And he'll be on to give us some tips, perhaps, on how we can reduce our water usage and energy saving tips in general. And we also talked to Martin Dillon, who has a new book coming out. Some of your calls and comments coming through. Keep them coming to 086 7700 555. Keeping us very busy today. You can call us to an 07491 25000. A texter says the top management in most or all of semi-state or all state departments are self-serving until they are weeded out and held accountable for their actions. There is no hope for this little country. Another caller asks, is the Kerry Mayo match only on Sky today? I didn't check that because I happened to have Sky. So I was a little bit selfish. I'm not sure if it's on RT. If any of you out there can help, is the Kerry Mayo game on free to air as well? Well said, Greg, says a texter. Zero accountability, especially amongst public servants and all the quangos. Quangos, compare it to us in the private sector where there is zero tolerance. Well, if I were to make a mistake, I am held accountable for it, I suppose. Another texter says, a new texter indeed, that part of Ukraine is Russia, descent, and the EU are encroaching ever further east, and this is what is causing all the trouble. Russia has a duty to help them people. What the hell duty has America to be meddling? Yeah, that's it. And it's the American involvement that really I was focusing on, but the history there, of course, is that that's a former part of Russia. Donegal or Mayo for Sam, says another texter. Two teams nobody gave any chance to at the start of the year. The bookies still don't, although Mayo seem to have the slight favourites tag heading into that game with Kerry tonight. And there's loads more there, which I just don't have time for at the moment, but I will get as many in as possible. We were talking about enterprise there and a new business. It's all about the new business, and we can celebrate that too, I suppose. The director, James Jordan, he's the director of Jordan's Atlantic Sea Salt. Hey, James, how are you?
Not so bad, Greg, and yourself?
And very interesting to speak to you, because you are the first salt producer in the county for quite some time, aren't you?
For several hundred years, Greg, yes. We're doing it for... I think we've traced it back now to nearly 400 years.
And tell us a little bit about the business. What's involved in making salt?
Well, first we take our high-quality water. We actually have our water tested here. We get it tested to make sure that there's no heavy metals or no contaminants in it. We triple filter it, and then we evaporate it.
And then you're left with the product itself?
We're left with the product then in our big pot that we used for using it.
So what determines salt quality then? Why could one salt be good and the next be bad?
Well, if you're talking about some of the other salts that you find in supermarkets and shops, most of the salt is chemically made, which is made with sodium and chloride, which isn't great. They're actually toxins in your body, you know. The salt we use, though, the salt that we have had, we've had it tested, and there's 50 different vitamins and micronutrients in our salt.
And it's quite interesting because there was a study released there within the last couple of weeks that said that perhaps we're overcautious on salt use and that, you know, salt, to a certain degree, the body requires it and it can have positive health impacts.
Oh, for sure, definitely. I've been making salt now for nearly 2 years myself, to use for myself, and I've been giving it to people, and they've all come back and said it was a fantastic product, and you should really start making it on a larger scale, and that's why we've gone down to make our salt down in Maharorty Pier.
And how is it going for you so far?
It's going fantastic.
Been well received?
Yeah, very well received. We've been, we were at the Aura Food Festival there, I suppose about 6 weeks ago.
That's right,
Rachel Allen just was was just fantastic for her. She loved the product.
And that's endorsements are important in the culinary world, aren't they?
Oh, yes, definitely. Now, we were also at the Donegal Food Festival, and Gary O'Hanlon has used it, and Nevin Maguire used some of the product too, and he said it was fantastic. Brilliant. Product, and it was great for the county. That, you know, Donegal needs a lot of more artisan food producers to build our image. Mm. Up here in Donegal, we have fantastic products up in Donegal, but they're not seen as good as maybe as the ones that are down in Cork, you know.
And the positive thing too is that it's a new business, and we hope that it grows and is a huge success for you, James. And we just wanted to bring you on just to highlight that fact and have a little chat with you about that. It's very much appreciated you coming on.